2016, global investment remained below the previous year, a decline of 4% globally, but 14% in Africa. There is optimism, but you know, there are so many geopolitical dynamics that are affecting the possibilities of renewed investment. One, residually the problems since the crisis of 2007 are still with us. But secondly and importantly, we have seen the bottoming out of commodity prices continuing to slacken investment in the developing countries that were particularly dependent on commodities. So with a cautious recovery in primary commodities, we can see some optimism. But then again, you see geopolitical dynamics in the Middle East are adding new uncertainty to particular petroleum recovery.
So the US remains the largest recipient of foreign direct investments, followed by the UK, China. However, the rise of corporate giants, even virtual ones, is seen as a cause of concern because they are reportedly generating huge profits, but for only a select few. Do you agree with this critic?
Well, certainly what we've seen as a major characteristic of the investment profile of the past year is, one, the continued strength of mergers and acquisitions and limited fresh greenfield investments. And for us, as champions of the sustainable development agenda, we believe that the main driver for new opportunities for growth infrastructure is greenfield projects much more than mergers and acquisitions, which are sometimes really audit entries to profit shifting because of jurisdictions with negotiated low tax cover, and not so much genuine movement of new fresh capital. But we are seeing a resurgence of China as a source of FDI and also as a destination. For the second year running, the US has remained strong. Britain and Ireland, the trends we are seeing preceded the Brexit. What impact that will have in the medium term is a different matter.
Investment in developing countries has declined even more. 14%, that's huge. Can you explain why this is so?
There are two main sides to it. The first one is rising interest rates in the U.S. attract some of the overhanging investable monies around the world. We are seeing, for example, the debate about lowering interest on foreign earnings in the U.S. will substantially have an impact on whether resources that were otherwise possible investable resources abroad become investments into the U.S. or revert to the U.S. But the most important underlying factor about low investment in developing countries is the subdued market for commodities that has continued over the past 2 years. And you're seeing some countries like South Africa, which although slightly improved, are still doing terribly poorly. I mean, that South Africa had an FDI inflow of $1.2 billion. That is minuscule compared to where it was and where it can be. And this is all attributable to the continued decline in investment in commodities.
The report this year focuses on digital investment. It's looking at digital multinationals. For the layperson, what are these? So we're just clear, what are these digital multinationals?
We at UNCTAD are seeing critical rising importance and centrality of electronic commerce as the fastest growing form of trade globally. In the past 3-4 years, electronic commerce has grown at about 5 times the average growth of the old traditional trade. And that represents a very important opportunity and a challenge. Now, what we are calling the digital giants are multinational entities which are investing in infrastructure or trading platforms, but predominantly have a massive visibility on electronic, on the digital marketplace. They can be ICT-based enterprises, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, and so on, or they can be major electronic trading platforms like Alibaba, Amazon, and eBay.
Okay, and how are they impacting global investment patterns?
Okay, massively it is a growing trend of not only building the platform of visibility, but also determining the new routes of trade, both in goods and services. We're seeing the massive movement of goods around the world, as it were, the interconnectedness of production and the linkages between producer and consumer in the shortest time possible at the lowest cost possible. So electronic commerce has created one of the most dependable trade facilitation vehicles. So the way they are doing is trying to push for standardization of procedures, trade logistics. For example, national legislation on cyber security, and integrity of payment systems, regulations on return goods. So basically, the creation of an infrastructure where the exponential growth of electronic platforms for trade away from the traditional physical trading centers as we've known them is what is driving new wealth. And the largest successes of the past few years are basically entities that are mastering these new opportunities.
Are they also creating jobs?
It depends on where. You know, in areas with traditional efficient market logistics, the growth of electronic trading platforms has been much slower than areas which are jumping certain fundamental infrastructure challenges. Like you can see my own country, Kenya, the first and most integrated electronic payment system in the world, the M-Pesa, basically grew dramatically because of poor communication infrastructure like fixed telephones and exclusion of a lot of people in from financial services access. Where you have had better infrastructure, the growth has been slower. But having said that, we are seeing a lot of livelihoods that are driven by new market visibility. I've just come out of China, and in the Hangzhou area, the home of Alibaba, you see young entrepreneurs who are connected to markets that they never knew existed, and markets connected to products they never saw. This is the big opportunity that's coming with electronic commerce. And we as an organization, for example, are pushing now that support to inclusive prosperity should be also seen as support to market visibility, electronic market visibility, for small enterprises in the developing world.
It's easy to see this in places like China, US, and so on. But in developing countries, like in Africa, for example, the digital divide is still an issue. Some people can't even purchase items online because they don't have credit cards or something like that.
That's not totally true. If you look at the case of Kenya, today 84% of the adult population of Kenya are financially included because of mobile money, the electronic wallet. What it means is that you don't need a credit card if you have a microchip in your computer. The digital divide slows down inclusion, but we have seen the conquest of mobile broadband on smartphones, and even sometimes on just ordinary phones, analog phones. The ability to receive and send messages, the ability to transfer and receive money, and the ability to execute paperless payments. Now, with a sufficient payment system developed by the state regulator, you don't need a substantial investment, for example, fixed broadband, before you can have financial inclusion. And that is the first step towards entry into the digital economy.